ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय I'm going to read a verse this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Before I do that, I would like to offer my obeisances to all the devotees who have gathered for this event. And I'm sitting here only at the request of Guru Ranga Prabhu, who's brought me here to this event. Otherwise, to some degree, I feel like a gate crasher, because all of you are here to celebrate a very, very wonderful event of how Srila Prabhupada planted Krishna consciousness here in the Swiss Yatra through many empowered devotees, of which unfortunately I did not take part. My only connection, I was here, I visited Zurich in 1982 when I was traveling as a brahmachari in Europe. And my GBC had given me, I was temple president in Boston, my GBC had given me permission to travel in Europe to see other temples in Europe at the time. I went to France and spent time with Lochanananda Prabhu in Paris, in Ermenonville at that time. And many other devotees, God brothers and God sisters, I saw in the course of my travels. And I visited Zurich also, and at that time is when I actually first met Guru Ramana Prabhu, and spent time in the temple, and he treated me so cordially. As I felt everywhere I went, it was a very wonderful experience. Of course, there was another element of the whole event. When I was traveling in Europe at the time, people didn't know that I was actually looking for a place to find shelter, because I was having some difficulty in America. The difficulty was that I was a brahmachari temple president for so many years, and I was getting started to become very difficult, having to deal with many matters I felt was difficult. I won't go into all the details. And then, so I guess if people heard that I was traveling in Europe, although it was originally given as a opportunity for me to see other temples, but I was actually looking for other places to establish myself, and got many invitations also. Although I don't think Guru Ranga was aware of that. So even more so, just to show his graciousness and hospitality, he was so kind to me, took me everywhere, took me different places to see in the Swiss Yatra, and I spent time in Zurich. I remember, one thing I remember is that one time he asked me to drive, and I didn't know anything about radars that take pictures of the license plate. They don't exist in America. And I got a ticket. And when I had gone back to America, I remember getting a phone call about the ticket. That they were saying, just so that you know, you got a ticket here in Zurich when you were driving. That was my only connection with the Swiss Yatra. That short visit in 1982. And then I visited again, I think, somewhere around once I passed through, I gave class. I think it was around 1989, maybe. Not sure exactly what it was. So, nonetheless, all of you are here to celebrate a very wonderful, auspicious occasion. And I know that you want to spend a lot of time discussing how Krishna consciousness began here in the Swiss Yatra, and his Swiss Yatra, and how it developed over the years. I did have the opportunity to take part in a similar event on Mandakini. She was there. Was Mandakini here? That's how I saw. Yes, there you are. She was there in Moscow. Yes, in 1971. We had a that was the 40th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's one-time visit to Moscow. And for me, actually, I have to be honest, I think it was probably one of the best festivals I ever attended in my 42 years in Krishna consciousness. It was just like dripping with ras. And it was just so... what was so inspiring for me is that Shyamasunda Prabhu was there. And Shyamasunda Prabhu began the event by talking about his one-time visit with Prabhupada to Moscow and how... he's describing how Prabhupada's eagerness, intensity of his desire to preach. I think the word he even used, I was a little taken aback by the word, but he said Prabhupada was antsy. I don't know if you remember that. He said that when he was in Moscow, he said Prabhupada had a very difficult time being there for 4 days, and the only thing he was allowed to do was to meet Professor Katovsky. And because Prabhupada was just so accustomed to take every opportunity to, you know, to speak to others about Krishna consciousness, and being in the hotel room for 4 days, because they had to be there for 4 days, and having only one opportunity to preach was just too difficult for Prabhupada, because he wanted to, as much as possible, to tell others. And then Jamasundar told his whole story of how he was standing in line, getting something for to eat, and what is it? Somebody came up to Nantashanti came up to him and asked him if he was selling, if he had any blue jeans to sell, wasn't it? Something like that. Because he could tell he was an American. And Shyamasundar said, no, I don't have any blue jeans to sell, but I have a guru. And then Ananda Shanti said, oh, really, really? And he was there with one other person. And he said, would you like to meet my guru? And then it was, I think it was happened on the second day of the visit. So Shyamasundar described how he brought Ananda Shanti to meet Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, for that day and then the whole next day, in the hotel room, just was like filling him up, like impregnating him, literally impregnating him with not only with Krishna Katha, Krishna consciousness, inspiration, Krishna Shakti, Vini Nahita Pravatana, impregnated him with the potency, because it was through him, you know, that Krishna consciousness started. And Shyamasundar was telling that whole story. And unfortunately, Ananta Shanti wasn't able to come to the festival. His mother was very, very ill, and she had some terminal disease, and he had to take care of her. But then the devotees who had contact with Ananta Shanti, they were given like a priority center stage, and they were telling all the stories about how Krishna consciousness started and took off. And of course, Shyamasundar's Prabhu's only visit to Moscow was that one visit with Prabhupada. And then as he was hearing all the stories, one by one, as the devotees were relating all of their hardships and difficulties, and how through Ananta Shanti that every Krishna consciousness started to take off, and different and preaching started to expand, and how books started to be introduced, and Shyamasundar, I was sitting next to Shyamasundar as he was hearing all the devotees speak to Russian. He was like awestruck. He said, this is too much. It's too much. This is too much. He was in complete ecstasy. I mean, he's like crying. He was just so much overwhelmed to see what Prabhupada's visit did. You know, that one visit to Moscow. did, how it transformed, you know, a whole yatra. And so I was also an observer for that event, and although I was asked to take part then, but I'm hoping to hear many of your realizations, all of you, during this event, of just how much Srila Prabhupada's potency is effective in impregnating bhakti into the hearts of others, inspiring them, and therefore giving them the potency to give Krishna consciousness to others. And I thought I would read a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is something that is very inspirational for me, and maybe we could speak a little bit about it from that frame of reference of how Srila Prabhupada, well, basically how he impregnated faith in the hearts of his followers. And I oftentimes think of the example that is given in, I think it's in Bhakti Tattva Viveka by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, where he describes faith. When faith awakens within the heart, it's like the birth of a newborn baby girl. So when a newborn baby girl takes her birth, then the mother, the parents are very, very careful to protect the baby from hunger and thirst and from excessive heat and cold and from dangerous creatures. And at the same time, the mother very carefully nourishes the baby so the baby can grow up healthy and strong enough to resist these disturbances. And he compares that Shraddha is like the birth of a newborn baby girl. And Shraddha also has to be protected. Protected from karma, the desire for fruitive gain, from jnana, the desire for liberation. And at the same time, that once that faith is awakened, it has to be protected by the gardens of devotional service and has to be simultaneously nourished. And how Srila Prabhupada, he was our guardian and he was our source of nourishment. He impregnated the seed of faith. In one class, I remember Srila Prabhupada gave him the verse, Shushusho Shradhadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi. It's a well-known verse in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. The verse said, O twice-born sages, so by rendering service to devotees who are completely freed from vice, great service is done. And by that service, one develops an attraction for hearing and chanting about Krishna. And Prabhupada, in that lecture, he said something very wonderful. He says, I have given you your faith. Of course, we always think that faith is there. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Saju Kabunoi. Shravanadi Sutta Chite Kori Udoi, that pure love for Krishna is there in the heart of every living being, doesn't come from any other source. But it's awakened when one hears about Krishna. So when Srila Prabhupada made the statement, I have given you your faith, we understand that Srila Prabhupada actually, for so many devotees in the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement, it was Srila Prabhupada's example that more than anything else that impregnated faith in his followers, empowered them to do beyond what they thought were their own limits. Because of Srila Prabhupada's capacity to not only awaken like the birth of a newborn baby girl, but to nourish and to carefully protect. So under that shelter of getting nourishment and careful protection, we see that devotees in our early days of our Krishna consciousness movement were literally, they were empowered because they always felt that protection and nourishment simultaneously from Srila Prabhupada's lotus lips. And therefore, we can hear so many wonderful stories, and I hope to hear many wonderful stories of the early days of the Swiss Yatra and the devotees who actually took part in that in the establishment of Krishna consciousness here in Switzerland. So with that little introduction, I'm going to read a verse from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter, 31st verse. Svayam samuttirya Sudustaram Dhyuman Bhavarnavam Bhimam Adhabra Sahrida Bhavatpadam Bhoruha Navam Atrate Vidhaya Yukta Saranugraho Bhavan. Translation. This is the prayers of the demigods. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And therefore you are known as a desire tree, Vanshakalpaturu. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nations, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. Purport. This statement reveals how the merciful acharyas and the merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead together help the serious devotee who wants to return home back to Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teachings to Rupa Goswami, said, Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. One can achieve the seed of Bhakti Lata, devotional service, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. The duty of the Guru is to find the means, according to the time, circumstances, and the candidate, by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from a candidate who wants to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. After wandering throughout the universe, a fortunate person within this material world seeks shelter of such a guru or acharya who trains the devotee in the suitable ways to render service according to the circumstances, so that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will accept the service. This makes it easier for the candidate to reach the ultimate destination. The acharya's duty, therefore, is to find the means by which devotees may render service according to references from Shastra. Rupa Goswami, for example, in order to help subsequent devotees, published such devotional books as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Thus, it is the duty of the acharya to publish books that will help future candidates take up the method of service and become eligible to return home back to Godhead by the mercy of the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, this same path is being prescribed and followed. Thus, the devotees have been advised to refrain from four sinful activities, illicit sex, intoxication, eating and gambling, and to chant 16 rounds a day. These are bona fide instructions. Because in the Western countries, constant chanting is not possible, one should not artificially imitate Haridas Thakur, but should follow this method. Krishna will accept a devotee who strictly follows the regulative principles and the method prescribed in the various books and literatures published by the authorities. The acharya gives the suitable method for crossing the ocean of nations by accepting the boat of the Lord's lotus feet. And if this method is strictly followed, the followers will ultimately reach the destination by the grace of the Lord. This method is called Acharya Sampradaya. It is therefore said, Sampradaya Vihina Ye Mantraste Nishpalamata Padma Purana. The Acharya Sampradaya is strictly bona fide. Therefore, one must accept the Acharya Sampradaya. Otherwise, one's endeavor will be futile. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore sings, Tandera charana sevi bhakta sanivas janame janame hai e avilash. One must worship the lotus feet of the acharya and live within the society of devotees. Then one's endeavor to cross over at nations will surely be successful. Om Agyanita Mirandasya Gyananjana Sarathaya Chakshu Omni Tamnila Tazmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Paroti Vachalo Angam Nangayate Ganim Yad Kripatamaham Vandeshi Gurundin Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastachade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Panchakalpa Tulubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhyevacha, Patitanam Pavanibhyo, Vaishnavibhyo Namaha. This is a very wonderful verse, which really helps us to understand. Does everyone understand English? I forgot to ask. Yes. Yeah. Mike Glosser. Actually, I'm not used to speaking straight English, so you'll have to forgive me, because I spend most of my time in foreign countries when I'm speaking fragments. So, when I speak continuously, and this is the first lecture I think I've given in straight English probably for maybe about 7 months or less. So, forgive me. I'm used to, I call it mental constipation sometimes, because I get so used to stopping and thinking about the next thing I'm going to say while the other person translates. When they have to go continuously, it's a challenge. Actually, that's why I asked if everybody understands. I thought maybe I'd put a translator next to me. But I'll manage. This verse really helps us to understand the kind of mercy Srila Prabhupada bestowed upon his followers, or who are described in this verse as your other devotees. Because the verse is translated as such, but that Krishna, he is Vanchakalpa Turu, and that he's very much inclined to fulfill the desires of his devotees. As we know, when the devotee, Vaishnava of the caliber of Srila Prabhupada, whose purity was supreme in everything that he did, but simply seeing him awaken faith in devotional service, because everything he did was in full Krishna consciousness. And in fact, one of the things that impresses me the most when I speak to the early followers, and when, especially when I read the early accounts of how Srila Prabhupada impregnated Krishna consciousness into the West, when he first arrived in New York, was how he awakened faith in people who previously had no faith. What to speak of awakened faith, how Srila Prabhupada became an authority to people whose sole purpose of existence was to reject authority. And I've been reading lately, I'm going back and reading a lot of the books of the early days. Right now I'm reading Miracle on Second Avenue again, and I've read the days of the Bowery, when Prabhupada was in the Bowery and planting the seed, Prabhupada Lilamrita, the Bowery and the Lower East Side. And it's, you know, and of course, before Prabhupada even went to the Lohi side, he was in Upper Manhattan. But as we know, in Upper Manhattan, when he was with Dr. Mishra, it was all kind of, the people there were a little bit different. They were, Upper Manhattan was more the middle class, upper middle class, and wealthier people who were going to see the uptown swamis. And then, of course, Prabhupada, I think he was staying in Dr. Mishra's ashram, and he had to go out. It was just it was his yoga ashram where he taught yoga, but there was no bathing facilities, and Prabhupada had to go out every morning to take his bath. It had no sink, no toilet, no nothing. It was in the middle of the winter, and then he moved out of that room into a very, very small room up on the next floor above Dr. Mishra's ashram. And then there in that place, Prabhupada started, because he felt compromised, I think a little bit it's described how he felt compromised in Dr. Mishra's ashram, because he was an impersonalist. And Prabhupada wanted to have a place of his own where he could just bring people in and sit and do what Prabhupada does. You know, he had a few blankets on the floor, he had his trunk of books, what he used as his desk, and he has his typewriter. And he was either just typing, working on his manuscripts of the Bhagavad Gita, and because his previous version had been stolen. And then a few people would come into the room, and Prabhupada would sit and give so much time and attention to everyone, and then he would have kirtan. And that's where he introduced kirtan. But then his typewriter and some of his personal belongings were stolen in that very small room. Prabhupada suspected it was the janitor, because it was the janitor who actually told him about it, and Prabhupada immediately suspected if it was a janitor who was behind it. And then people were recommending that maybe Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was not inclined to stay at that place. Why, if he's going to get these things replaced, why take the chance of getting them stolen again? And then somebody came up and offered Prabhupada to stay in the loft in the Bowery. And in that loft was one other person, as we know, who was addicted to drugs. And the person who was the owner of the loft, he said, "I'm going out to the West Coast. If you'd like, Swamiji, you can stay in the loft, but there's one other person who will be your roommate." And Prabhupada relocated into the loft, and it was there, in the loft, which, that place where Srila Prabhupada really started to get a footing, and who were the people that were coming to Prabhupada. And I know practically all the devotees who joined in those early years, many of them, we all came from the same mold. We were all hippies, really, literally. I mean, I know I was. And especially those who were living in the Bowery and the Lower East Side, where this is described that they had rejected the society's values, he rejected authority, and he went to the Lower East Side because it was very easy to live there, it was very cheap to live there, and they could live their independent way of living, completely free from all authority. And I know for myself, and also many of my friends, and also many other devotees who joined, one of the reasons why we were so against authority, against the government, was because of the Vietnam War. You know, many of our friends were going off to Vietnam, getting slaughtered in Vietnam. And these were all the people that were, I mean, I wasn't one of them back in, since I joined in the early 70s, but still, from 66 to early 70s, everybody was in a very similar mold who was joining the movement. And here's Srila Prabhupada, who is having kirtan in classes on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. People started to come, and the description of the people that were coming is very clear and evident, both in Miracle on 2nd Avenue and and as well in Prabhupada Livanvita, it was mostly the younger hippie generation who were totally against any kind of acceptance of authority. And here is Srila Prabhupada, who's ambassador from the spiritual world, who represents the highest authority. And how do you put those two scenarios together? You know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, the guru, the acharya, ambassador from the spiritual world, who uncompromisingly preaches Krishna consciousness without compromise. I mean, you hear all of Prabhupada's lectures. Some of my favorite lectures are the 66 lectures in Prabhupada, Second Avenue. So uncompromising. Prabhupada, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Rupa Goswami's instructions about pure devotional service. And here, Prabhupada is speaking very authoritatively to the people who live to reject authority. And how do you put those two scenarios together and get what came out of it? And it's what really inspired me is watching the whole transition is, of course, Srila Prabhupada represented the highest authority. He spoke about the who is Krishna, and he spoke about the spiritual master. Of course, he never said, I'm the spiritual master. I mean, people gradually began to put the dots together. You know, I remember, like, I remember as a kid, I really was attracted to those dotted dots, you know, and then you finally get all the dots together, you know, you get a picture. So, you know, all of them are sitting there, you know, and Prabhupada's speaking, representing the highest authority, and gradually people are starting to put the dots together, you know, and you know, Prabhupada oftentimes would quote the verse, Hinatenam Akaryanam Hanukrishna Naveshaya. This Rupa Goswami says, it is the duty of the spiritual master to somehow or other give them Krishna. The rules and regulations can come later. Quotes that many, many times. Hinatenam Akaryanam Hanukrishna Naveshaya Sava Vidhi Nisida Shoyatiya Vivakankara. And Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning, people didn't have any concept of accepting Srila Prabhupada as guru, but what really tipped the scales to accept Prabhupada's authority was not that he was guru, but that he was genuine. I studied it very closely, how people, you know, because Prabhupada walked his talk. Prabhupada, everything he said, he was doing. And you couldn't see any distinction, you know, between what Prabhupada was saying to others and how he was living. He was always there manifesting all such qualities of compassion. In fact, we were reading the other day, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was describing in Bhakti Loka. He was describing about what does it mean to follow the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And he says, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas means that we follow the example of their determination, their compassion, and their constant chanting of Hare Krishna. This is anyone who tries to introduce a different path other than this is the path of our previous acharyas. Anyone who tries to introduce a different path, he says, they promenade a new path and they cheat the world. He said, therefore, the devotees derive great pleasure when hearing about the examples of our acharyas. And he gives Haridas Thakur as the embodiment of this conception. That Haridas Thakur, when he was beaten by the Muslims and he was taken before the Qazi, he said, you can cut my body to pieces, but I'll never give up the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And it also described how Haridas Thakur was compassionate even to those who were beating him. He felt compassion to them. Actually, he was even thinking, as described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that when the guards were beating him, Haridas Thakur perceived that there were intense anxiety from beating him, and Haridas Thakur asked him, "What is it? Why are you so disturbed?" And the guards said that, "Well, because we've been in order to beat you to death, and you won't die." And Haridas Thakur, seeing their anxieties, understood. He felt compassion. Even in the midst of that beating, he felt compassion upon them. He was thinking, "Oh, you want me to die? I can die. I'll die for you." So then he gave up. Apparently, externally, it appeared that he gave up his life heirs, but actually within, he was always chanting the holy name of the Lord. He was taken. He was thrown into the river. His body was thrown into the river. They thought he was dead. His body floated down the river. He got up out of the river, stood up and began chanting Hare Krishna again. All the Muslims were trying to get him to stop. And of course then others in his humility was is that people were saying, felt so bad that he was beaten and tortured and suffering. He said, "Oh no," he said, "actually I deserve to be punished a lot worse than that." He said, "Because I heard blasphemy and I didn't give up my body." This was, not only did he feel compassion, not only was he constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord, but his determination and his humility, everything, all the qualities were there, which Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains is, this is the path of our previous sadhus. It's the path that they teach. That's the path that they leave behind. Or as this verse described, it's the boat that the acharyas cross, and then they leave it behind on the other side for others to cross. And these three principles is their chanting of Hare Krishna, their determination to always carry out the order of the higher authority, their continuous chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and their compassion upon others. And because Srila Prabhupada, he's the person, he's the acharya who set the method by which his other devotees could cross. He left behind that method. He crossed. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, actually in his commentary, he says that, I forget the words, the words in the verse are, I can't remember the words. But he describes the meaning of these different words from the verse means that the acharya, he creates a movement. He creates a movement and leaves the movement behind. And then so that others can cross the ocean of birth and death. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in the commentary of this verse. He creates a movement, leaves it behind, and that's the boat that he leaves behind. He crosses by his method. Krishna accepts his method. And then he leaves his method behind so that others can cross on that boat and go across the ocean, which is this verse is describing. So Srila Prabhupada left behind this boat or this method which was established by our previous acharyas for crossing over the ocean of material existence. And Srila Prabhupada's method of awakening faith, impregnating faith, awakening faith, was, as we explained, by his example. Because he was so genuine, others became inclined to, they wanted to do something for the Swami. Many of them didn't even understand, what is a guru. And one of the things I remember, the part that I was reading, was really fascinating. It's the first time Srila Prabhupada introduced the concept of initiation. And it's described, the Prabhupada said, he said, some of you, I'm going to want to give you initiation. And here these people that are just helping the Swami, they had never chanted 16 rounds before. They didn't even have beads. Here's an example of Yena Tena Pakarina Mana Krishna Navisha. It's the duty of the guru to give them Krishna, and then rules and regulations come later. He didn't even have, he said, okay, I'm going to give initiation now. All of you will have to get some beads, and they have to make beads, and I'll show you how to chant on these beads. And then many of them didn't know even what initiation was. And they asked, what is this initiation? The Prabhupada didn't tell them so much. And they started talking amongst themselves. The Swamiji says he's going to give us initiation. And the others say, well, what does this initiation mean? And the others say, I don't know. And they started speculating. Swami's going to give us initiation. And then they're talking back and forth with one another. And finally, one of them got up enough courage to ask Swamiji, what is initiation? And he went to Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, you said you're going to give us initiation, told us to get ready, but what is this initiation? And then Prabhupada dropped the bomb. But he already had them. He dropped the bomb, he said, initiation is when you accept the spiritual master to be as good as God. And then that was it. No more further explanation than that. And then he started, and then I can't remember who it was. He went back and started talking to the other ones and said, Swamiji says that, but he's always preaching the spiritual master. It's never God. How do we understand this? What do we do? We're supposed to take initiation. And some of them were saying, well, you know, if the Swamiji says I should take it, I'll take it. You know, if the Swamiji says it, I'll do it. That's it. You know, because whatever the Swamiji says, he's already got them. He's got their faith. He's got their faith. Mm-hmm. Faith was awakened, although many of them didn't really have an idea of accepting him as guru, but they saw that here's a person that everything he speaks, he's doing. And that tipped the scales. Because we're not so much inclined, and especially that generation, to accept authority was not something. I know it wasn't easy for me. It wasn't easy for me. And it wasn't easy for, I'm sure, a lot of other people who somehow appeared at that time. But when you saw Prabhupada, and when you heard the example of Prabhupada, and then when you saw how he lived, and you saw his example, it just, well, it tipped the scale. Although we were hovering, that finally we just moved, because the example was always there to give us the strength to do it. The example was there. Without the example, it was very different. You even read in the early days when Prabhupada, first Harinamda went out to Tompkins Square Park, Prabhupada was right there with everybody. Sitting there, right there, leading all the kirtans. He was leading, and then other devotees were dancing. And then although Prabhupada went out all the time, but then at one time, then some of them got up an idea to go out, because Prabhupada was very busy doing other things, and they went out on Harinam, and without Prabhupada. And then they were describing how they, you know, that they meditated on what Prabhupada would do and how it would be pleasing to Prabhupada. And they said, yes, let's do it. Let's go out in Harinam. And they finally went out. They stood there for so many hours and they had so many experiences. And they came back and they all immediately couldn't hold it back. They ran up to the room to report to Prabhupada. You know, and Prabhupada was sitting there and said, Swamiji, we went out. We went out chanting. And we did this. And Prabhupada was beaming with a smile, so happy to see that, yes, you can do it. See, you can do it. Yeah. Like he was the guardian. He was protecting, nourishing, giving the strength, everything, right there. And therefore, faith was awakened by Prabhupada's example. Faith was maintained by Prabhupada's firm teaching about the glories of pure devotional service, and as he was the guardian of pure devotional service, always protecting us from the dangerous creatures of the tendency towards karma, the tendency towards even the desire for nirvishesha shunyavadi, for impersonalism, for liberation. He always quote that verse, bhukti mukti spriha yavat pisachi hiri vartate. That bhukti and mukti are like two witches which haunt one like a ghost. As long as these two witches are there within the heart, one will never be able to understand or taste the bliss of pure devotional service. So he gave us our faith, He nourished that faith. He protected that faith. That was his method of distribution. His method of distribution was awakening faith and then protecting it. And therefore, it's so important for all of us to understand what Srila Prabhupada's method of distribution was. What's the boat? What's the boat that he crossed in? And what's the boat he left behind for all of his other followers? Or Krishna's, as described in this verse, his other followers were meant to cross. That boat he left behind for us to cross in is the same boat he crossed in. Because Krishna's very kind. He accepted his method for us. He accepted his method so that we can stay in the boat. And all we have to do is stay in the boat. That's all we have to do. I remember one Prabhupada once gave an example. I think it was about the modes of material nature. I'm supposed to end by 8:30. I'll be just a couple of minutes. And he was saying that that when one is crossing the ocean in the boat, he said there'll be many disturbances created in the wave by the waves of the boat. And he said in the same way, he said devotees, they'll be disturbed by the modes of material nature. He said, but there's a difference. He says, of being in the waves directly and being in the boat influenced by the waves. He says, well, as one is in the boat, he's influenced by the waves, but he's still in the boat. And he says, he's influenced, but he's not in the waves. So in the same way, he's saying that it's not that the devotee's in the modes of material nature, but he's influenced by the modes of material nature. But he'll, as long as he stays in the boat, he'll be able to get to his destination. So in this way, Prabhupada was actually saying, just stay in the boat. Just stay in what he gave us. We don't have to change anything. We don't have to introduce anything. Just remain faithful to what Srila Prabhupada gave us. And we can always look to that example under any circumstances. Prabhupada never let us down. We can always look to that example. We're talking about preserve faith, preserve his method of distribution. We also have to preserve what that example is for all of us to cross the ocean. And even though there may be so many disturbances in the ocean, I remember, real quick example. I'm sorry, it's not an example, it's a story of myself, forgive me. But when I first started coming to the temple I started coming the end of 1972. And there was a godbrother of ours who left recently, Keshava Prabhu. He was like my Vatna Pradashika Guru. He was very, very kind to me. And whenever I would come to the temple, Keshava was always there. And he was like my best friend, you know. Like, he never... One thing I always admired about him was he was... Here I was, a long-haired hippie, coming to the temple with a dog, attached to a girlfriend, and so many different things, but he never looked down on me. I always felt like, you know, he just accepted me as I am. Never passing judgment, accepted me as I am. And all he would tell me was about Prabhupada. He would just tell me stories about Prabhupada. And it was so endearing, his attitude towards me. And one day he gave me this, he said, I got something for you. He reached in his pocket, and it was a cassette. Prabhupada's lecture, Teachings of Queen Kunti, that he had just given in 1973 in Los Angeles. And at that time, I couldn't understand Prabhupada's accent so well. I had a hard time. It was the first time I ever heard Prabhupada speaking. And I remember having a little cassette recorder, and I would listen to a little section. I would go home and listen, and go back and listen to a little section, and then listen one back and go back again, listen, then move on to the next session. And I remember that there was this in this particular lecture that he had given to me, Prabhupada was saying, when one is in the material world, it's like being in the middle of the ocean. And he said, when you're in the middle of the ocean, there'll be so many disturbances. He said, but if a devotee, and he said also, he says, a devotee, in the beginning, when he first comes to Krishna consciousness, he says, Maya will test him. He'll test him to see if he's coming to serve Krishna or disturb Krishna. Yeah. And he says, therefore, if we stay simply stay truthful, he says, we can be very protected from all the disturbances because we should be prepared that Maya will test us in this way. And I always used to think, I remember, this is one thing that I always remembered. Serve Krishna, disturb Krishna. Serve Krishna, disturb Krishna. And I always felt that, you know, as I gradually started to come to the temple, and then I moved into the temple, I was prepared. I felt like completely inoculated. I was going to get tested. Prabhupada told me, this is in the beginning, Maya will test you. Coming to serve Krishna, disturb Krishna. And then, but when I moved into the temple, just a couple of months later, after always listening to that lecture, somehow it was really nice. I was waiting for the test, and nothing was coming. And I was thinking, what Prabhupada told me is going to come. You know, what is this? And then somehow the test snuck up on me, and I got sucker punched. And I didn't realize it. And the test was, it was becoming very difficult for me to get up from Mangalarti. Our temple commander was a former Air Force sergeant. And he used to make sure I got up from Mangalarti. And I remember one morning, I fell into oblivion, I forgot that I was going to be tested. I remember one morning waking up, he's shaking me out of the sleeping bag, water, everything. And I hit my fist against the floor. I said, That's it! I can't do anymore, I'm leaving! And I was thinking, I'm leaving. And then all of a sudden, it was like a tape recorder. Prabhupada, in the beginning, Maya will test if you're coming to serve Krishna and disturb Krishna. Just like a tape recorder in my heart. You know? And it just saved me. I just, oh yeah, that's right. I'm getting a sucker punch, but that's right, this is what Prabhupada was talking about. You know, and then I just realized that's it. And then from that morning on, it was like, that's it. I had no difficulties with Mangalarti. Of course, that was the first one. We've all had our series, one after the other. But what saves us? What saves us? Strength. Remembering those words, that's our strength. Prabhupada gave us. He gave us the strength, he gave us the faith, he gave us the nourishment, he gave us the example, he gave everything. Everything. It's across the ocean of material existence. We have to become just filled with gratitude and understanding the debt we have to our Sampradaya Acharya, as Prabhupada talks about here, who by his example created the method that, so all his other followers can cross the ocean of material existence. And this is what all of you are celebrating. You'll all be celebrating and hearing so many wonderful stories of how Srila Prabhupada empowered devotees. And I'm very eager to hear them. And I'm very grateful that all of you have given me the opportunity to be here to hear these stories. And I'm very grateful to Guru Gauranga Prabhu for inviting me, which is why I said was really like the only reason why I came and crashed the gate. Forgive me. But, thank you for being tolerant. Hare Krishna, close to Prabhupada.